is the PT Pintcast, a podcast that talks about physical therapy over beer, bringing together clinicians, researchers, and forward-thinking PTs in a show that's anything but boring.
Let there be beer!
This is the PT Pintcast with your host, Jimmy McKay.
Welcome to the next episode of the PT Pintcast. He is a PT misfit, a self-proclaimed mad scientist whose passion often gets the best of him and gets him in trouble, caught somewhere between his personal vision of better health for every American in this lifetime and his mission to be a doer of extraordinary things. This guy is often found trusting crazy ideas. More formally, this guy is the managing partner of Pro Activity, the president of the APTA New Jersey chapter, an amateur endurance athlete, and a soccer dad. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the PT Pintcast, Mike Eisenhart.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. We say the best conversations happen at happy hour. Welcome to ours. First question is always the hardest. What are we drinking tonight?
I am drinking a Southern Tier IPA.
Is that from Western New York? Is that where that Southern Tier is? I think I've had some of that before.
Lakewood, New York. I'm not sure. Maybe that is Western New York.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I went to undergrad just south of Buffalo, and Southern Tier, that's all they talk about it. Good selection. Yeah. I'm going Pride of Chippewa Falls. I'm a big fan of this brewery, Line & Kugel, going Oktoberfest from Line & Kugel. So welcome to the PT Pintcast in New Jersey tonight, I assume?
Yes, I am.
All right, well, let's jump into it. Prevention, whether work injury or chronic disease, and what does that really mean? Where are you going with that?
Well, the question is, can we prevent? You know, and that's sort of the ongoing question.
So as physical therapists, can we prevent all these things?
Yeah, right, exactly. Can we get ahead of them to the point where they don't happen? And, you know, it's a tough question. A lot of people will tell you prevention as an idea sounds wonderful, but it's impossible. How can you really prove that you prevented something from happening? So that's kind of my view of the world, is that we can lowering risk enough that we get to the point where the event doesn't occur.
So something as simple as making sure people are moving, is that kind of what you're getting at?
So that might be prevention of things like diabetes, right? Okay. Like we know that sedentary time is almost one for one correlated with diabetes risk. Sure. You know, get people up and get them moving.
So how do you implement that into your practice? It's Pro Activity, and you can check out Mike's practice website at pro-activity.com. When you're at work, how do you kind of implement this into your treatment plans with your patients?
So I have a non-traditional practice. That's kind of where the misfit piece came in. Let's see, maybe a year into having a license, I decided that it was time for me to start a practice. Thankfully, my sister's a PT, and so she was kind of my voice of reason and said, yeah, we can do this. Let's do it together. But, you know, you shouldn't go it alone because you'll probably make things a mess. So we started kind of a traditional practice, did our thing, and really pretty early on to that, it just didn't make sense to me at all that we would just continue to wait for people to get hurt, walk in the door, and then try to put, you know, the pieces back together when we know that certain things lead to other things, right? Like we can say, you know, I mean, so the classic example for me was there's that person with the Trendelenburg gait, that little old lady who's got the hip, you know, she's going to fall over, break the hip, and probably be dead in 5 years.
Right.
You know, and at that time in the PT world, like there was no funding for maintenance, you know, like we weren't allowed to maintain people. That was bad. You had to wait for them to actually need therapy, and therapy was restorative only. So it just didn't make sense. And I was kind of like, this is ridiculous that we would wait for someone and potentially have them on a track where they're going to die when we could fix their strength a little bit and probably get ahead of that. And so I started to look for ways to do that. And luckily for me, some folks in industry and within business heard that idea and said, you know, we would love to prevent our back pain problem. We want to take a crack at that. And that's kind of where I started.
So it's more of an ounce of prevention, pound of cure.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So you say it's a non-traditional practice. That's how you're pitching it to me as a PT student. I'm on board. I mean, shouldn't this be more of a traditional approach?
Oh my gosh, from your lips to God's ears.
I mean, this is, if we call ourselves, and we hear this term a lot on Twitter, I hear it a lot in class, I hear it amongst PTs, movement experts. Shouldn't we be out there before someone gets hurt and has back problems or has a gait issue? And
that's
why aren't we?
Well, I mean, you know, there's lots of reasons why we're not. I mean, I think if you talk to anybody over the age of 30, maybe who's in the field, maybe 35 at this point, they would probably tell you because you can't get paid.
Right.
You know, no one's going to pay you to do this. And that's a totally viable issue, right? I mean, people definitely, you know, obviously we've got to take care of that. But that's not going to be like that much longer, or at least it's not nearly what it was. You know, and when we first started, it was really a very non-traditional sort of misfit idea. People would, you know, sort of argue with me and go like, you can't do this. Like, what are you doing? Like, this is not PT. Now, I mean, like, in all sincerity, when I hear someone, you know, kind of entering the profession and saying, yeah, like that, of course that's what we do. You know, that's awesome. Like yeah. I sit back and I go, oh, like it's about time.
So is this going to change because insurance is going to start to pay for more maintenance? Or is this going to change because patients will now start to look at physical therapy as something you don't just get after surgery, or you don't just get when your back hurts, that you can get it beforehand? Is the change going to come on both, or one more than the other?
I think both. I really do. I think the patient demand, or the client, consumer, whatever you want to call them, the demand is going to be there, right? And we need, as a profession, we need to build that demand, right? That's our branding
right.
thing. But I also think that the forces are starting to swing the other way. You know, there was a time, and at that time, you know, healthcare was not nearly as expensive as it is today. And so that was kind of where we looked at it and we said, you know, we're going to sort of stand on the horizon and look outward. And ultimately, it's an unsustainable model. Like, people cannot pay and have these jumps in cost forever. And now, almost 20 years later, we're at that, right? We're faced with a triple aim, and we've got a lower cost and increased quality. And there's nothing prescient about that. It wasn't like we looked into the future somehow. It was obvious. You know, if you just stood and looked at it for a while, it was clear as day. But that really, I think that's a big part of it, is that now the costs are just so much that people have to find ways to lower costs and get in early. And of course, the science comes back and says that as well.
Well, at least the science is there now. And a lot of times people look at the I word, insurance, as a bad thing. But if insurance is looking at the bottom line, and we can prove, hey, physical therapy can lower the cost, the insurance companies are going to follow.
I agree. I think at some point it will. I mean, it's not going to be easy, right? We have to continue to prove our value. And you know, that's a really big thing that we're all after, but we're getting there. I mean, it's more and more we're starting to see those studies come out. And there are some real, you know, giants in our profession who are doing the work for the benefit of all of us. But that's exactly what we should be talking about.
Well, that's great to hear. So let's talk about something that I found out about you a couple days ago before we started talking. President of the APTA New Jersey chapter. That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm not really sure what they were thinking, but something strange happened.
Just real quick, what drew you to something like the APTA? Because as students, we're taught, you know, that's something we should get involved with, and hopefully a lot of students out there do stay involved with it. So what kind of drew you to not only be a member of the APTA, but go ahead and run the state chapter?
Yeah, well, I mean, I've always been, you know, involved. I mean, I as a student, I guess, I really wasn't. But right out of school, I thought it was the right thing to do. And quite honestly, like, I wanted the journals, and I'm kind of a geek that way. I wanted to learn as much as I could. But I was not an active member. I would not call myself super engaged by any stretch. And then it just so happened one time that they were doing some strategic planning in New Jersey. And so I decided to go. It worked out well. It just kind of worked in my schedule. So I went. You know, I kind of sat in the back of the room, and it's kind of classic for me. I sort of sit there quietly trying to listen and pay attention. And then eventually, like, my foot starts tapping, and like something strikes me, and like I can't keep my mouth shut. And I piped up from the back of the room. And, you know, that's a touch of death in you know, a professional organization. Because somebody looked at me and they're like, well, great. Like, why don't we pull you in? You know, it was kind of one of those moments. And, you know, I was lucky that way. And the current leader, you know, the chapter at that point was, you know, someone that I really respect now, because she tapped me on the shoulder and said, you know, you got a big mouth, but you got some good ideas. Why don't you get involved?
Well, maybe that's kind of an advantage, you not being involved, and all of a sudden you, now that you're out in practice and you're seeing it and you get excited, maybe that's it. Maybe that's an advantage. Maybe you don't want someone who's kind of doing the status quo the whole time.
I mean, you know, it definitely brings a different view of the world, that's for sure. And, you know, and I tell people all the time, and New Jersey was the same thing. I said, listen, I'll be, you know, the presidency is 2 years, and then you can run again for two more if you want to kind of get reelected. And I told them, my goal, because this is the way it's going to happen anyway, is that I'm probably going to piss you off enough that in 2 years, you're not going to want me back, but we'll probably get some cool things done.
Yeah, just get some stuff done before you get kicked out of there. That's all.
Yeah, right on. That's it.
All right, so I went to the website, your practice website, which is pro-activity.com. And this was plastered right across the top. I like it how it's kind of like your mission statement. You call it your five elements, and they're in this order: move, fuel, recover, endure, connect. So what do those elements mean?
That is what we kind of live our practice by, right? So those are literally the elements of what we do. Over the years, we started looking at, what does it really take to be a prevention leader? What does it really take for someone to live, you know, their strongest, happiest life, their best version of themselves? When you look deep enough in it, those are the five things that kind of surface. Those are the words we chose, of course, but those are the five things that surface. You got to be active enough, whatever that is, and you got to put the right fuel in the system. You know, you have to have adequate recovery and rest. You have to learn the skills of resilience, right? Life is going to get hard at some point, and when it does, you know, you can either kind of figure out a way to ride the wave or get crushed by it. And there are skills there, you know. And then finally, connect. And there's a ton of research about sort of the health benefits of having tight social relationships. And so that was sort of our formula. Told people, look, if you get these five things right, you're going to live a long, healthy life. I think that's the goal for everybody.
Move, fuel, recover, endure, connect. Write those down, PT students, and steal those ideas and just kind of put those into practice. I might steal those and just make a TED talk out of it because I think that sounds TED worthy.
That's awesome. Yeah, a little reference credit would be cool.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Cool. I'll give you credit right at the end. So you also call yourself an amateur endurance athlete, and that's I think what drew me to you. I saw you kind of having some interactions on Twitter, and you're on there on the bike, and I think it was a Cervelo P2, P3 that you were on.
It is.
That kind of tugged at my heartstrings. I just picked up my first Cervelo P2 off of Craigslist. Great Craigslist steal.
How long
have you been doing endurance sports?
2008 or 2009, which in the grand scheme of things isn't super long. You know, my dad was a marathoner growing up. So I've been around it my whole life, but I never really got into it. I thought it was a horrible thing. For the most part, I thought it was torture, and was, as a PT, I could easily say like, oh, you know, that's bad for you. You shouldn't do that, and convinced myself of that for a long time. But we were at the dinner table one night, my sort of the extended family, and I'm sort of one of a big family, and my dad's birthday. And so my brother and I kind of made a side bet. He said, listen, if you challenge me to a marathon, I will do it. And that'll kind of shock the world. And the idea was like, well, if dad does it, I'll do it. You know, because my dad had always for a while said, hey, I want to do one more marathon. You know, so that was kind of our little scheme. So I threw my hat in the ring. I had never done a race, did the marathon, and it was a disaster. But I learned a really important lesson, which is it's not just about toughness. And that was like the first time in my life that as an athlete, it was, you know, it wasn't just about toughness. There was a skill there. There was training there. And I really got hooked. So I did a couple marathons. And then I said, boy, if we're going to do this, let's go after the big one. Let's do Ironman. Had never done any real swimming. I mean, I was a lifeguard growing up, but never did any real swimming or cycling, but wanted to do it. Went out to Utah and did it, and it was also awful. But then, you know, kind of got that skill and started, you know, got under my skin. So I did a couple more.
So you did Utah. Which other races have you done?
So yeah, so my first Ironman was St. George when it was still a full Ironman.
Right.
And then I went on and did New York City, Ironman New York City, which also was a
one-off
year thing, and then they canceled it. Last year I did Lake Placid.
So, good.
Like, thankfully, Lake Placid was the only one that they haven't canceled after I did it, which I was starting to get a little bit of a complex.
Lake Placid's a good course. I did Placid, and I did Madison, Wisconsin. They're just gorgeous places to hang out, really cool places to visit.
I would love to do Wisconsin. I've heard it's a great race.
Nice. Ironman Moo. It's a very, very nice course out there.
Awesome.
So it sounds like, you know, going from your amateur endurance athlete sports, those five elements, move, fuel, recover, endure, connect, it sounds like something that could be written across the top of a triathlon training plan or written across the top of a home exercise plan for anybody. It kind of just fits more of a lifestyle thing.
That's exactly right.
All right, let's switch back to Twitter. So I kind of found you. I saw a picture of you riding the tri bike and said, hey, who's this guy? You're talking about disrupt, which is a hashtag that's been on. I've seen it around. Well, what is it? And you kind of had alluded to it can be healthcare's disruptor. Why physical therapy can do that and disrupt. What do you mean by that?
So I really believe, and I take credit for that. It was my one famous hashtag moment, right? I came up with the idea of the disrupt.
Just Twitter famous.
Little known fact, right? Because when I first put it out there, no one bit at all. And then my good friend Jerry Durham and Jason Richardson and I did a presentation over at PPS last year, and we threw the term back up there, and it caught a little bit, and so that was fun. But I believe that. I think that PT, you know, if you really look at disruptive innovation and you spend any time, you know, really reading and understanding the models, you know, there's innovation that's continuous, you know, and those are sort of like, we get a little better incrementally over time. And then there are those sort of low-end disruptors, the ones that come in at the low price point and really deal with people who, the markets that no one else really wants to deal with, quite honestly. But then they figure out their game. And once they figure out their game, then they can go to the higher and higher level markets and they can change things. And I really think PT has the opportunity to be that within healthcare. We're not expensive on the grand scheme of things. On the grand scheme of things, a consult for us versus a surgical consult or a surgery is nothing, right? It's peanuts. And over the course of time, we've dealt with people who not necessarily the high end, highly lucrative client. And so over time, we can kind of build through those markets and be a disruptive innovation. Now, there are some people who have pushed back on me and said, hey, listen, like, we're as much the incumbent, sort of the one to be disrupted. as anyone else. And I agree. We're either going to be the disruptor or the disruptee. Is that, I don't know if that's a word.
That sounds
but yeah,
good.
And I believe it. I think that once we learn how to get in early and be the entry point, let's call it, you know,
right,
primary care team, the entry point to care, we can change things.
So do we have a better chance of disrupting, of kind of getting in there and shaking healthcare up, getting in with other healthcare providers or with patients? Which end do we have a better shot at making a bigger impact?
That is the $64 billion question. That's hard, really hard to know. I mean, I think that for a while, it's probably the consumer, because the providers are, there's going to be some protectionism going on,
right,
you know, for a while, right? Like the idea that the pie is getting smaller, and so everyone's going to hoard and protect their piece of the pie. It's a you know, distinct reality. On the other side, the consumer is going to, you know, be looking for, as copays go up and people need to get good care quickly, they're going to be looking for fast, convenient, easy, and effective, and a good experience. And we can answer that call. You know, I'm a big believer that employers is still another big part of that. It's a big part of that, you know, kind of the third leg of the stool, which allows us to go after and say, look, there are large sort of blocks of lives, and they have every reason to want to keep those people healthy and in the game. We have the school, you know, kind of skills and tools to do so. Could be the consumer, could be the employer. I think providers are harder, but at some point we're going to be a valuable part of their team.
Yeah, in a previous episode, we had Sharon Dunn, who's the APTA president, on, and she said a quote that I thought was really, really great. It said, if you keep giving patients quality care and quality physical therapy, they're going to demand it. And I think if they demand it, because ultimately, and back to Jerry Durham, customer, the patient, is the end user. If you make them demand it, the insurance companies and the employers will start to come our way, especially when they see that we're a little bit of a lower cost option and we're effective.
Exactly right.
All right, we're going to take a 60-second break. We're going to reload the beer. When we come back, we're going to talk about hashtag lifestyle PT and what's it about. We're going to talk a disparity in health, a strategic asset, and we're going to ask for some wisdom from Mike Eisenhart back in 60 seconds on the PT Pinecast. Don't move.
Like what you hear? Leave us a review on iTunes. It's not like our moms can keep giving us 5 stars every day. Or can they? The PT Pinecast proudly supports the Wounded Warrior Project. Since 2003, the Wounded Warrior Project has been raising funds and awareness for the needs of injured service members, helping injured servicemen and women with aid and assistance, and to provide unique direct programs and services to meet their needs. Their continuing goal is to foster the most successful, well-adjusted generation of wounded service members in our nation's history. To find out how you can help the Wounded Warrior Project, visit them online at woundedwarriorproject.org. This is the PT Pinecast.
And we're back on the PT Pinecast with a misfit, the APTA New Jersey chapter president, an amateur endurance athlete. He's in charge over there at Pro Active Physical Therapy. Pro-activity.com. It's Mike Eisenhart. We're talking physical therapy, and you had brought up a point before, health disparity and health as your strategic asset. This sounds like MBA talk, but how does it fit into physical therapy? What does that mean?
I love it. Yeah. Well, I mean, health disparity is something that, you know, is a sort of a passion of mine. You know, I mean, when we look at the U.S., right, I mean, there's sort of a multi-class system, mm-hmm, unfortunately, when it comes to health. And it doesn't have to be that way. And there are a lot of factors and determinants of that. But that's something that I think that we all need to figure out you know, how to address. And it hovers around the same basic principles of population health and kind of dealing with health overall. But the disparity between, you know, people who can get good care and can't get good care, and the costs of care, and also the costs of being a provider, those are like polar forces, and they're really influencing the way people are able to stay healthy or not. And so, and it goes right into health being an asset, right? So I don't know who actually owns that term, and they talk about health assets, you know, so really, you know, just like you would have financial assets, so kind of that MBA talk, that you would have health assets, and that really allows you to sort of live the life you want to live. And as PT providers, maybe that's a mindset that we could get into, this idea of, you know, look, like, where are your health assets, and where do you want to wind up in life? And we either need to accrue more assets or cut your liabilities or however you want to look at it, almost like the financial planner of health. That's something that really resonates with me.
Yeah, I don't know who said it either, but I remember a quote that came to my head when I read this online was, when we're young, we sacrifice our body for money, and when we get older, we'll sacrifice all the money we have for our health. It's kind of along those lines where physical therapy can kind of come in as a role, again, as a low-cost option to help you keep that health as a strategic asset without having to sacrifice so much money. If we can convince the insurance companies and the patients that, I think PT's got a shot to really disrupt things.
Yeah, I mean, it's like risk adjustment, right? I mean, it's no different than someone selling you life insurance. You know, I mean, it's the same basic idea. And there are probably some cool models that we could work toward, but that's exactly right. How do you protect that asset and keep it healthy and grow it over time, as opposed to, you know, seeing it drop off? And
well, that kind of goes back to those five tenets of your clinic: the move, the fuel, the recover, the endure, connect. If you kind of pay attention to all of those, you're probably not going to need surgery down the line. Now, stuff happens, but if you pay attention, you can hold on to that health as a strategic asset, maybe a little easier and maybe for a little less money than you would have if you had to pop for surgery down the line if you didn't pay attention to it.
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, if you look at the kind of the quality of life curve, you know, of nations, you know, you look at, you know, the American, average American versus the quality of life of some of the other nations, you know, ours really drops off significantly as we age. And we have these sort of 10 years or 20 years at the end of our life where we're spending a tremendous amount on our health and we're also having poor quality of life. And I just feel like, well, we didn't time it right, right? So similar to your endurance athlete, if you bonk at mile 18 right. And you don't get through the finish line, like it wasn't a good day. But if you managed your fuel correctly and you got through the finish line strong, then you had a great day. Maybe there's the same, you know, maybe there's a parallel there.
I think a lot of the terms that you're using, a lot of the anecdotes that you're using, they're great. Just like that one. If you bonk at mile 18, it wasn't a good day. I don't know. I think before I got into PT school, I was in radio, so I was kind of just a regular consumer. But the anecdotes and the way that you're talking, that resonates with people. People can kind of visualize that. Do you think maybe physical therapy a couple of years ago, we were kind of maybe sounding too academic for the general public?
It's a real possibility. I think that, you know, maybe as a profession, and again, I don't know if I'm the most qualified to say this. I'm not a historian of the profession, but I guess any profession goes through some kind of a life cycle. And, you know, there's a point where we were sort of in adolescence maybe or pre-adolescent where we were trying to prove ourselves a little and that we were academic and that we could be and that we were evidence-based and all that. And that's great. But I agree with you. When you're talking to someone who doesn't have that background, doesn't make sense. You know, we got to use terms people can understand and keep it simple.
All right. So we had talked earlier, one of the first topics we talked about was prevention, work injury prevention. That was one Twitter conversation I kind of was watching from afar with you. And you talked about ergonomics. And I feel like that's something that PTs can kind of really get involved with because it goes along the lines of preventing the issue before it comes about to save your health assets and to save you money. So what are some things that PTs can do ergonomic-wise to help patients out before they become patients?
So, yeah, I mean, ergonomics, you know, is something that we can and should be deeply invested in as a profession. I mean, in a sense, it's an engineering science, a little more, you know, on that side. And for a while there, PTs could just kind of get a certification, you know, could just say, yeah, I'm a PT and I'll sit for a test and get a certification. I don't think that's the case anymore. Now it's really much more of a human factors engineering type science. But it's clearly something that we, you know, it overlaps tremendously. So as part of the, you know, team-based care approach, you know, the engineering of risk and kind of how the human interfaces with, in many ways, the workplace, but anything. And so I think that, you know, it is an area that we should be involved in and have kind of a deep roots there, sort of the, you know, the biomechanics of work. But I sort of have gravitated toward that whole prevention piece because what we found, of course, is that some workplaces you can engineer the risks out. You know, manufacturing and materials handling are two places where engineering controls really come in well. In other places, like, you know, some of the work that we do, and we've worked, you know, quite a bit in construction and some of the, you know, a little less predictable workplaces, you know, there's a lot you're relying on that person. They have to really be healthy enough for the job and be able to do it and also know the risks when they see it. And that's harder. So it's a balance, but without a doubt, I mean, you have to have an appreciation for it if you're, excuse me, an appreciation of it if you really want to be in prevention.
Yeah, it sounds like a logical progression just watching it come up in that discussion on Twitter that I saw you kind of get into. If PTs are movement experts, going to where someone is going to spend a large amount of their time moving and maybe in a bad position or a bad way, we could probably do a pretty good bit of damage in a good way in preventing injury if we maybe corrected just a couple of simple things in the way people move at work.
Yeah, and it's a, you know, it's definitely something that is, you know, kind of a pendulum, right? I mean, for years it was, well, you know, let's move toward, you know, it's like an evolving science, you know, let's get people seated correctly and get them in better postures and neutral positions. And those things are great. But by the same token, we also know that now that you sit long enough, even if you're in a perfect position, and it's also a problem. And so, you know, we've got to have to keep the principles of the body that, you know, I like saying that, look, we were built to move. Like, you know, we weren't built to be stationary very long, you know, and be able to use those principles and still be productive. And so there's some balance there. And to me, it's a bit of a performance element, just like we would look at an athlete, maybe not an athlete hitting a baseball or an athlete, you know, running a marathon. It's just an athlete who's getting through their day. And it's one of those things where we've got to kind of work toward, you know, it's a progress, and there's a lot of culture change, you know, kind of mindset shift for people. And, but once people start taking care of it and saying, hey, you know what, I really do owe this thing a little rest and recovery. It served me well for a while. You know, they come around to it.
We hear a lot of things like this, like, you know, we should be pushing standing desks or, you know, breaks every 15 to 20 minutes to move. And then I look at around at my classroom, third year PT students, 38 of us, and we're all sitting. Today we sat from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. just sitting. And there's only a couple of us. And I jumped on the bandwagon because one of my classmates, Zach, said, you know what? I'm going to implement a standing desk and I'll just stand in the back of the room. And he's already like, you know what? My back, my lower back, it already feels better now that I'm not sitting for 8 or 9 hours a day.
That's awesome.
It's you got to practice what you preach. How am I going to tell a patient, you know, once I graduate, maybe can you try a standing desk? If I'm not really doing it myself.
Yeah. Well, that is the lifestyle, right? I mean, that is the whole idea. I don't know if people have noticed. Hopefully they haven't, but in a lot of these meetings, you know, APTA meetings and things, I always sit in the back of the room, and it's not because I'm the cool kid. It's because I cannot sit that long. I just can't sit still like that. I respect people who do, but I just can't do it. And I get up and I'm in the back of the room a lot of the meeting just standing because it's just murder on your body, you know?
All right. So episodes are looked at like pints. And if we do something a little bit smaller, I call them parting shots. So if you were to have a couple thousand PT students listening to you on a podcast, in hypothetically, of course, what's something we need to really pay attention to?
So I think the easy answer is some kind of skill or academic learning. And so maybe that's the non-traditionalist in me. But I guess the thing that I would hope that everyone would pay attention to is the fact that you're going to change someone's life. You know, at the end of the day, that's the thing that you're training to do. You're learning and training to change lives, and you're going to do it. And that's an awesome thing. And the first time you do, when someone looks you in the eye and you just know, whether they say it or they don't say it, that you had an impact on their life and the trajectory of their life is different because of you. It's the most powerful thing ever. And so, you know, when you're slogging it out, and I mean, the PT student of today, I mean, I think you've got it, you know, tougher road than maybe than we had it. I mean, it felt tough to us too, but you know, when you're slogging it out and you're tired and you can't possibly cram something else into your head, you know, and you're thinking about your boards or all those other things, just stop for a second and look back and say, wait a minute, I'm going to change someone's life. And that's, you know, that's what I'm doing here. And if you can keep focused on that, then you can do anything.
I like those words. I'm going to take those words to heart. It's a good way to look at it. We kind of often kind of maybe overlook that as students. We're just trying to get done. We're just trying to pass the boards and start working and pay off some of this debt. Why we got into it in the first place is probably something to pay attention to.
Right on.
Appreciate you taking the time. I liked all the good advice. I encourage people to check out Mike's clinic's website. I think it's just really well done. I do like those 5 tenets. You can check him out online at pro-activity.com. If you want to kind of get some thoughts of his in your head, you can find him online at Twitter. That's Mike Eisenhart, Mike Eisenhart. And just kind of get into that little thought stream, get into some good conversations with Mike. And we appreciate you taking some time out. Keep doing some good work up there as the APTA New Jersey chapter president. Make sure you're really challenging people so that they want to kick you out eventually.
That's the idea.
Mike Eisenhart, appreciate you taking some time out and talking to us in the PT Pinecast, man.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
Follow us on Twitter at PT Pinecast and online at ptpinecast.com. It's like TMZ, except with way more important information. And no Miley Cyrus. Okay, it's not like TMZ at all. The PT Pinecast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. Our lawyers made us read that.